Present.
Hurt.
Present.
Juergens.
Present.
Olson.
Present.
Farr.
Present.
And Ryer.
Present.
All right, Madam Chair, we do have a quorum.
Thank you. Next order of business is the approval of minutes from the Thursday, January 21. Representative Howard, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, and I'll move the minutes.
Representative Howard moves approval of the minutes. Members, do we have any comments? We can approve this motion by voice vote, so please unmute yourselves. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Members, today we have Commissioner Jennifer Ho from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and Rachel Robinson, Deputy Commissioner. They're going to take a look back and a look forward and give us some budget numbers too, I think. So we'll get some good information from them. There are lots of attachments that Mr. Wirth has sent you. I have glanced over them. There is just a ton of additional information that groups have sent us. So welcome to the committee, Commissioner Ho.
Chair Houseman and members of the committee, I'm Jennifer Ho, and I am the Commissioner at Minnesota Housing. I am joined today by my Deputy Commissioner, Rachel Robinson. She's been with me for almost 2 years. She just hasn't spent as much time with me up at the Capitol. So here we are together. Yes, it's a big budget day, and I'm waiting to see when the paper's released. So I think I'll save that part of my presentation for the end. But we want to talk about both the COVID-19 housing assistance program that we did with coronavirus relief funds, and also talk about the new federal COVID emergency rental assistance program that Congress passed and the former president signed at the end of December. So a lot going on. I just to start, grounded in our mission that housing is the foundation for success. And so at Minnesota Housing, we really collaborate with everybody to do the housing work that we do. And I guess since we probably have a public audience out there as well, I would just acknowledge that we could not have done any of this without extraordinary partners across the state. So just start by acknowledging them. So the program that we operated from the end of August through the first week of December was the COVID Housing Assistance Program, COVID-19 Housing Assistance Program. And the goal of that was really to make sure that families in Minnesota could keep their housing during a public health emergency and prevent evictions or homelessness at a time when the homeless system was incredibly strained trying to do social distancing and implement its own public health protections around homelessness. We designed the program so that it would pay for past due housing related bills. It covered both renters and homeowners, and it was $100 million of the CRF money. It was one of the largest per capita in the country. My understanding is that 38 states or thereabouts ran something similar, but every state did their own. And because those coronavirus relief funds also went out to local jurisdictions, in total, there were over 400 programs operating around the country. Next slide, please. As I said, we were just so lucky to work with partners all across the state, community action programs, tribal governments, nonprofits, some partners that we had worked with before, other partners that we never had worked with before, some organizations that were kind of committed to a geography, others that had kind of deep cultural connections to new immigrant communities, and others. We had a centralized intake through 211 United Way so that you could go online yourself, you could text, but you also could just call and talk to somebody. to find out if you were eligible for the program and get connected to one of those local administrators. Even though the majority of folks either directly or through an organization use the online system, you could do a hard copy. You could get a hard copy and fill it out and either drop it off or mail it in. We didn't set a cap on the amount of assistance. I think we really just didn't know how far back people would be in arrears and how much they would need. And we really tried to just limit how many hoops a household would need to go through to get the help. In early December, it was still unclear whether the federal deadline of December 30th would be in place. And so we stopped accepting new applications on December 7th. We had an enormous influx of applications that final week, and our partners are continuing to process those applications this month and maybe into next month as well. So what do we know about who applied? Data that we have as of January 8th, and because some of the paper applications were still being processed, that's why it's not kind of completely final numbers yet. But we received over 40,000 applications. We had an application threshold of 300% of federal poverty, but 61% of the households who came in were actually below 100% of federal poverty. And 92% of all the applicant households were below 200% of federal poverty, which I think just plays out what we knew, is that that COVID really impacted some people really hard, and oftentimes very low wage workers. There were just some other questions that we solicited, and 7% of the applicants noted that they had previously been evicted. 54% of applicants identified as being Black, Indigenous, or other people of color. 22% of the applicants had previously experienced homelessness. And I have to say that that's a number that really caught me by surprise. I just thought it was really high. We were very pleased to see the geographic distribution. 53% of the applications came from the metro and 47% from Greater Minnesota. That's a slightly more dated figure. So what did people ask for? The vast majority of people needed help with rent. But we also covered other things. Utility arrears were big, 17% of the total. Mortgage payments were significant. People who were eligible for forbearance were directed that way, but folks who weren't eligible for a forbearance program, we did help with mortgage payments. And then you'll see small percentages that went for other types of pieces. I think 0% means less than 1% in this instance. So that's the program that we did with coronavirus relief funds that closed to new applications in early December and that we're wrapping up on the payments of. And when we have final numbers on that, we will come back with a final report of final expenditures and what we know about people who both did and didn't receive assistance. I don't know if it makes sense, Chair Houseman, to just pause on the old before we shift to the new. Or if you want me to keep going. You're on mute, Chair Houseman.
Thank you. Mr. Wirth, do we have any questions yet?
Madam Chair, no members have questions at this time.
So please continue, Commissioner.
Great. So the federal stimulus that was passed by Congress at the end of December, signed by President Trump at the very end of December, signed into law on the 27th, included $25 billion of COVID emergency rental assistance. Next slide, please. Again, it was signed into law on the 27th. It actually ended up extending the December 30th deadline on the coronavirus relief funds. Of course, that kind of extension came a little too late to be able to do anything proactive about it, but it has given us some space to be able to pay the administrators who are processing those claims to do that. But $25 billion of federal emergency rental assistance, fairly unprecedented piece, money that was directed to the U.S. Department of the Treasury. An estimated $375 million was available to the state and seven local units of government that had populations of 200,000 or more. Minnesota Housing received $289.4 million of that $375 million allocated to the state. And the other jurisdictions received smaller allocations. I think maybe they're, like $10 million or below. We're getting final confirmations on how much they received. And then separate from the $25 billion, Congress also allocated $800 million for tribes across the country. And we believe that that 9 of the 11 Minnesota tribal governments did accept funds, and we're working on confirming how much went to tribes. But it could be total for the state, as much as $400 million in emergency rental assistance. Eligible uses, it is specific to renters. So the Congress did not include homeowners in this program, which I think many of us share concerns about that, since homeowners who are in forbearance have the potential to lose their forbearance coverage over the course of 2021. And it is highly defined, both by the Congress and by additional guidance that's been coming out through the Treasury in terms of what's covered and what's not. So rent, utilities, and home energy costs. So similar to the types of things that we did for renters with the previous program. The federal program allows you to do both arrears, going all the way back to March. So people who missed the opportunity of the COVID-19 housing assistance program have another opportunity to come in, but it also allows us to pay prospectively. So if you couldn't make rent in January and you have no reason to believe that you're going to be in a situation to make rent in February, you could get help prospectively, which is different than how we operated the other program. And then, specific to expenses related to housing that were incurred during the pandemic. So as I said, going back to March. Only 10% of the funds can be used for direct administrative costs. Zero can be used for indirect administrative costs. And 90% of the funds have to be used for the rent arrears, or the prospective rent, or the utility and home energy costs. I am running a program of this enormous size in this period of time, inside of the cost parameters, is going to be very challenging, but it has been prescribed by Congress. The last point is that we will only pay prospectively if arrears have all been taken care of. Next slide, please. Eligible recipients, instead of setting it relative to the federal poverty guideline, Congress set it relative to the area median income. 80% of area median income is the ceiling for eligibility if you've experienced financial hardship because of the pandemic, and you can demonstrate a risk of experiencing homelessness or housing instability. I think that, really understanding what acceptable documentation of those things are things that we're in dialogue with the national advocacy groups and with the Treasury. We have to prioritize households at lower incomes, those at 50% of area median income, and households that have been unemployed for at least 90 days. So thinking a little bit about how do you operationalize that prioritization is something that we're working on figuring out. Some of the local jurisdictions last year did direct to landlord programs so that landlords could apply on behalf of their tenants. The federal program allows that. So landlords and owners can apply on behalf of tenants who meet the eligibility requirements, but the tenant needs to co-sign the application. And then also just note that tenants who apply directly, if their landlords don't provide the documentation, we're allowed to make, in those instances, a payment directly to the tenant. This is the other just really hard clause, is that the Congress gave the Treasury authority to recapture funds that haven't been obligated at the end of the federal fiscal year, September 30th. And so folks who haven't obligated at least 65% of their original amount could have the funds taken away from them. But folks who have allocated at least 65% could find themselves getting another allocation back. And it's really unclear, especially being in the middle of a transition of administrations federally, exactly how that will play out, because it's authority that the Congress granted to the Treasury, but it's not 100% defined how it will work. If we hit the 65% threshold, we can operate the program through the end of the year with the potential for a 90-day extension. I'm assuming that means that if we were to suddenly get another $50 million because somebody else didn't spend it, that we would get the extra 90 days to be able to continue to spend the funds. Next slide. So this is just the time limitation that we can support an individual for a period not to exceed 12 months, except you can add 3 more months if it's necessary to make sure that the household remains stably housed and if the money is available. So start with 12 months cap, but with the possibility of adding another 3. And I think I also mentioned that that we pay directly to the entity due unless the entity due doesn't agree to accept the payment, and then we pay directly to the household. So I covered that a little early, I guess. Last slide is really based on everything that we learned in the second half of last year running the COVID-19 Housing Assistance Program. We're really trying to apply within the construct of the congressional language and the Treasury guidance. But a few key things that we're just working and hard on. One is that it really is beneficial when you have local entities that are doing outreach, marketing, kind of navigational services, helping households in need of assistance, completing applications. That's particularly important for people who don't speak English or for whom English is not their first language. It's particularly helpful for people who don't have access to the internet. It's just been really helpful for folks who benefit from having somebody kind of help do the technical things, help them through the technical things. At the same time, that one stop that we had with 211 was extraordinarily helpful in terms of a simple way to get started. And, you know, we think that a centralized front end that goes further into the application process might be beneficial as well. Having a technology platform that helps us and landlords and tenants understand what's happening all the way through to payment being made, it's going to be really helpful. And I think just really being able to get more efficiency out of the way that application processing and payment is being done is something that is really important to us moving forward. So that's really the top line of what I wanted to put out today. And so I'd be happy to take any questions. I brought my deputy commissioner with me because she is leading the internal work and is reading all the Treasury guidance and participating in conversations we're doing with the local governments, the tribes, and national allies. So I brought her along to take your hard questions. I'll take the easy ones. And with that, thank you.
Ms. Robinson, any additional comments before we go to questions?
Chair Houseman, no additional comments, but I'm ready for questions.
And Ryan Baumchog is on as well. So if there are questions addressed, Ryan or Mr. Baumchog, please feel free to chime in at any point. Mr. Wirth, do we have any questions?
Yes, Madam Chair. First on the list is Representative Heinrich.
Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Commissioner. I just had a question in reference to the you mentioned something about how the landlords can apply on behalf of the tenant, so long as the tenant co-signs the application. I was just wondering what the reason for that is if the landlord can provide evidence that the tenant is delinquent on payments, why would they still need that signature? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Representative Heinrich, you know, unlike the COVID-19 Housing Assistance Program, we aren't making these design decisions. They were made by Congress, or they're being made by the Treasury, U.S. Treasury Department. And so I don't know that I am capable of answering why, but I can tell you why we don't have influence over that decision. It's because it's being made out in Washington, D.C.
Follow up? Mr. Representative?
Not at this time. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Wirth or Mr. Baumchog, can we go to our screen with the active speaker or so that we see that? Okay, thank you. Mr. Wirth?
Madam Chair, Representative Agbaje has a question.
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Ho. There was a part in the presentation that talked about the time extension for rental assistance being based on stably housed. Was there a definition provided by the Treasury Department as to what stably housed means? I'm just concerned that it could be dependent on factors, maybe if the landlord is trying to not renew a lease or something like that, particularly after 12 months is up. So I'm just wondering if there were any other criteria provided by the Treasury Department on that.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Representative Agbaje, I'm going to give this one to Deputy Commissioner Robinson.
Ms. Robinson.
Yeah, Chair Houseman and Representative Agbaje. On this piece, housing stability and income go hand in hand. So if a household is struggling to make rent, we consider that to be unstable. So people would need the housing assistance. So we, of course, will see how much funding is available, see what recovery looks like in the overall post-COVID world, and if households are still facing challenges at that time, that would meet the definition under the Treasury guidelines.
Follow-up, Representative?
No follow-up, thank you.
Mr. Wirth?
Madam Chair, next on the list is Representative Ryer.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. Good to see you again. I have a question about the use of funds timeline with the 65%. And my question is, on the next slide, you talk about being able to guarantee payment for 12 months, maybe up to 15. So is that amount of the full 12 months what gets obligated? So that's how the 65% is calculated. I'm just trying to think about how the numbers go together.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative Ryer, you know, the 65%, I don't know why they did that. Mm-hmm. It's because we can do a look back all the way back to March of 2020, It could be that you could get 12 months of assistance and it just takes you through February of 2021. Or you could apply effective October and you could get 12 months of assistance through September. I mean, everybody I think is going to be on a different timeline there. Sure. If we did something that went all the way back to last, I mean, having just run a program, I think we have less 2020 arrears than other states who didn't have programs might have. But we also now have the new stimulus check and the new federal unemployment bump up. And, you know, that was pretty effective for folks, you know, up through when that ended in July last year. So it's really hard to tell. And then, of course, you know, who can project the recovery, right? So I don't know what they were thinking in setting the 65% threshold. I respectfully kind of joked that I don't know that the people who designed this have brought up an enormous program in a short timeline. That's one time. We just did it. It's one of the hardest things to do is to do something that's huge, time limited, and one time. So I don't know. I think they didn't want any state sitting on the money while another state was burning through it. And so they're reserving the right, but how they actually exercise it, it's hard to say. And Congress could intervene again. The Treasury could exercise its discretion. So I think we're going to get started with a lot of unknowns.
Representative Ryer, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to comment that I think often when large programs like this get implemented, decisions are made by people who haven't done it, and kudos to you to keep your good humor about that. And especially with the lack of predictability, I hadn't thought about that variation on when the time starts and ends. So you have a lot of complexity there. Thank you for sharing.
Madam Chair, if I may, just in follow-up to that, I think everybody is trying to view this federal money as a blessing. And it's got some strings on it. I think that we did lobby through our National Trade Association, the National Council of State Housing Agencies, to move the money through Treasury where it would have a lot more flexibility compared to if it had gone to HUD, where they have a lot of definitions and rules that would have made it less flexible. There are some places where we would have liked more flexibility than what the Treasury guidance has offered. But then also, you know, we got a new Treasury Secretary yesterday, so we don't know whether or not there's going to be a change in guidance that's been offered or additional guidance that gets added. With the coronavirus relief funds, you might remember that Treasury guidance came out long after the dollars. And so some things that we had initially thought were possible, like paying indirect admin, became not possible after the fact. So we're trying to roll with it, and I'm trying hard not to cry in committee.
I wonder, is there still the possibility that they could decide to make homeowners eligible as well?
Chair Houseman, the Congress would have to do that. We had also hoped in the new president's stimulus proposal that there would be something in there for homeowners, and there's not. But of course, there is going to be a long debate with the new administration and the Congress around what, if any, a third stimulus looks like. So certainly the advocacy for homeowners and appreciating what happens when people's forbearance term ends is going to be really, really important. And Deputy Commissioner Robinson, if you have anything to add to my comments, please feel free to do so.
I just had to go on mute because my phone was ringing. I think you asked Ms. Robinson if she had anything to add.
And she did not.
Okay. Members, we can also think about this as small business support because our landlords are small business owners, and hopefully we have kept them stable through this time and will continue this next year with this program available to us. Mr. Worth, further questions?
Yes, Madam Chair. Next on the list is Representative Howard.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, a comment, and I want to again just commend Commissioner Ho and everyone at Minnesota Housing for their work last year to stand up a program that prescribed $100 million of housing assistance in 100 days, essentially. $1 million a day of need of Minnesotans to help afford their housing. And as I mentioned before, that need didn't go away in the new year. And so to say a nice thing about Congress, I don't get to do that very often, really appreciate that they provided this rental assistance. So that's the nice part about Congress. And Commissioner, you've hit on this a little bit, but could you comment on just the challenges of this second iteration of this assistance being more prescriptive and what sort of challenges that presents you and us in terms of getting these resources out to landlords and out to renters? Will that be more challenging given some of the strings that are attached?
Commissioner?
Chair Houseman and Representative Howard, thank you for the question. You know, in some ways it simplifies things because we're not free to do anything we want, right? And so because the Congress and the Treasury has put parameters on the program, it's just more about implementing, and a lot of the decisions are operational as opposed to structural programmatic decisions. We're really excited about the direct to landlord option. You know, we watched some of the local jurisdictions do that, but I also suspect that will work better for the larger landlords. And so small landlord outreach, small rural landlord outreach is going to be something that's really important for us to do. And probably having to think about how we support small landlords who also may not have broadband or something like that as well. So that's something we're just going to figure out. But so I think there's some simplicity to having it be federally defined. It also means that there will be more in common across jurisdictions in terms of what programs look like, which also might help eliminate some confusion. Last fall, people didn't know if they were applying to their city or their county or the state. It's just not how most people think about the world. So I think there could be some simplicity. This also gives us kind of a head start on speed because it's fully defined. So there's just, again, it's more operational decisions that we need to make and not getting ahead of Treasury guidance. We need to go slow enough to not get ahead of Treasury, and we need to go fast enough to get it up as quickly as we can. And so we're trying to balance that. We are in dialogue with the local jurisdictions. We have begun the conversation with the tribes. We're obviously getting lots of advice from many stakeholders and advocates across the spectrum. So speed is really, really, really important, but so is just not racing out of the gate so fast that you Treasury guidance comes out the week after that and tells you that you can't do what you just spent money to do. And then that 10% admin cap, figuring out how to design this to be as efficient as possible and really thinking about that efficiency right from the day that I find out I'm eligible to the date the check gets cut, that we were not as fast as we or anyone else would have liked because of the high volume that we got in the last program. We were behind at the end of the first week of taking applications and we never caught up. We're still processing those applications. And obviously, as an administrator, we're in the system, but if you're the person whose landlord wants that check and you're afraid of getting evicted, then we're processing your application isn't very satisfying. So, and if you don't have internet, you don't have as much visibility into the status of your application. So we're really just trying to learn from all of that so that we put as much wisdom as quickly as possible into this next version. That's a very long-winded answer to your question. If you want to redirect me, I'd be happy to take that.
Representative Howard.
Well, thank you. And you actually, in that answer, answered another of my questions or comments in that it really seems vital that we coordinate with our local jurisdictions. It's well and good that, Minneapolis and others are receiving direct allocations, but from my perspective, it doesn't serve Minnesotans well if there's a Hennepin County program and a Minneapolis program. I'm glad to hear those conversations are happening about a streamlined process. One other question I did have, you sort of commented on the challenges of the previous program, standing it up so quickly amidst this volume that there's just no way to really adequately in short order respond to such a huge volume of Minnesotans. In particular, I know, and I've heard, and we've heard from some of our diverse communities, some communities that have had challenges with internet. I'm just wondering what you've learned about populations that that struggled to access the CHAP dollars, and if what we've learned about that can be incorporated into the rental assistance that will come out in this year in this new program.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative Howard. Yeah, I think the most important thing is for people who aren't used to interacting with government, and a lot of folks who've had economic stress through this period. This is the first time that they maybe have needed help. Although, as the data suggests, many of them have had situations where they've needed help before too. But having an entity that they trust be their navigator is really important. We saw that with ACER, the Latino Economic Development Corporation, the tribes. Being able to work with an entity that you trust to be able to apply for a program that that's governmental and maybe you don't trust is really important. I think the thing that's hard about the admin cap is just the amount of time. The frontline staff were like grief counselors to many of the people who called that were in so much stress and so much pain on many fronts. And they just heard out people's stories. And they have, absorbed a lot of that stress and trauma that households are feeling right now. So figuring out how to do that on a skinny admin budget is gonna be complicated. I think the other thing is that we really tried to minimize the burden of documentation in the previous COVID-19 housing assistance program. And there is a higher standard of documentation and verification with this new federal program. And we have to have processes in place so that there's not duplication of payment. And so figuring out how we would do that if we don't have a shared technology or shared front-end system with the local jurisdictions. We have offered to kind of stand up an infrastructure that the local jurisdictions could plug into to do that. I think that means that everybody has to have the same kind of sense of this is what it's going to look like. This is the pace of the rollout. These are the vendors, and I can't promise that we're going to be able to broker that with all of the 7 local jurisdictions. I also know that because the 7 local jurisdictions are all metro, it is incumbent upon Minnesota Housing to be thinking about the difference between rural communities, urban hubs in greater Minnesota and the metro. Which I think is why kind of having that small landlord or the person that doesn't have broadband front and center in our thinking is really important right now.
Further, Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. And just one final plug to our local municipalities and others that are watching that I do think Minnesotans will be well served if that we can have the maximum amount of coordination. And so to the extent we as legislators can be helpful on that front, let us know, Commissioner. Thank you.
I see Representative Tice has a hand up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Ho, I just want to thank you and your agency so much for the work that you've all been doing. I really appreciate no matter where it comes from, the fact that landlords feel a little bit more engaged. One of the first things that I was hearing from some of the folks in my area is they really didn't like having, they really didn't feel like they were maybe being appreciated for what they were doing, in that they didn't have a voice in helping out folks. Representative Heinrich brought up, you know, why need the signature? And I can say I probably understand why, just to make sure that there's a checks and balances there. But my folks really appreciate that part of it. And so thank you for making sure that happens. They want to feel like they are appreciated and that they do have a hand in this. And a lot of people don't have, as we said, some of the services so that they can access this money in a way that's going to be beneficial for both parties, which means fast. Also, I'm not hearing as much frustration from having to navigate a lot of this. So the fact that you want to cry in committees and have frustration, you're doing a great job, because my folks aren't feeling that like maybe they had at first. So again, really appreciate what you're doing. Want to continue that. I think engaging the landlords is probably our smartest move, and having them have a say in this is really helpful to them. Some of them are really struggling. I've got one that is just really struggling and beside herself, not really sure what they're going to do. And then I've got another who's like, you know what, we're working through it. We're finding, you know, a little bit of the light at the end of the tunnel. So we just have to, it's not something that's going to happen really quickly. We know that. But I really appreciate all your efforts and your work and making sure that we are addressing the concerns and needs that we're hearing from most people. For me, that's the landlords. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Know that we do appreciate all the work that you're doing, and we'll continue to put our two cents in when we're hearing things from our constituents, so that, you know, we can keep going forward and not having a lot more people just saying, the heck with it, I'm going to give up. You know, I just can't do this anymore. So have a good day, and hopefully we'll go ice fishing soon.
Mr. Worth, who's next?
Madam Chair, Representative Hassan is next on the list.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for all the work that you and your team have done in housing assistance. I just want to, you know, ask you a quick question about, there was a lot of issues about process, and we know government is complex and complicated for the everyday, person. Many of the issues that I was hearing was, issues related to access to internet, people having, not having, computer literacy to go online and create, password and username. And then some of the agencies that were helping, not having enough computers to assist people. And one of the conversations I had with some of the housing advocates was that, maybe, providing, iPads so then more people can apply at any given moment. And then the other issue I came across and many people raised was the W-9 form. Some people don't even know what that is, and some of the, landlords couldn't provide that in time, and then some payments were sent to, if it's like a big entity that has multiple housing units in multiple, in different states, and then there is a hub, that's where the, check was sent to, but then the local landlord and the person that's in charge of the, Minnesota unit doesn't know about it. There was a lot of process issues and some red tapes. I just would like to hear lesson learned, and then moving forward, how do you plan to tackle that? But I do appreciate the housing assistance. That was huge on helping families keep them housed. As we know, it's really easier to keep people housed than house them after they are being homeless. And then on the end of landlords being small business owners and keeping them, also they have a mortgage payment, so helping them with that That was really vital. But I just want to address how do you plan to tackle some of these issues that, you know, keep coming up? And it's small, minor issues, but we should address them. And what are the learned lessons? Yes.
Commissioner.
Chair Houseman and Representative Hassan, I hear you. And we have heard from many stakeholders, these frustrations too. It is just really the challenge of trying to move so much money in a short period of time. And it's just, I think the direct to landlord piece should make for an interesting process, but the federal requirements on documentation aren't gonna make this program easier for people. And that's just going to be the federal requirement. So I don't wanna overpromise that this is gonna be easier. Because I think the federal requirements in some ways raise the bar in terms of how much documentation needs to be collected. I think that we can do a better job from the get-go of trying to manage people's expectations about how long it's going to take to process a claim. Because you put it in an online system, why should it take so long? But there actually had to be somebody who touched the application and was able to verify and produce the paperwork. So how we communicate about it from the get-go is something that we're thinking a lot about. Rachel, I don't know if you want to speak specifically to the W-9 issue.
Ms. Robinson.
Yeah, Chair Houseman and Representative Hassan. I will reiterate that we hear you, that some of these challenges are things that we're really thinking about and how we consolidate and specialize the planning for the future program administration. So just thinking about, who specializes in that part, how can we make sure applications get in the system, get processed, and there's better communication, a line of sight communication, as we say. Fortunately, in the bill, landlords would be the W-9 entity. So in order to make a payment to somebody, we have to have the ability to make that payment. And the W-9 issue was a very real challenge with last year's program, with the landlords just not participating. If they don't participate, we can't make a payment. With the new bill, the good news is that if the landlord is just non-responsive, we can make the payment directly to the household. And there are provisions in the bill that that payment to the household is not taxable income and does not impact their federal receipt of benefits. We might need to work on state benefits, make sure we're crossing all those T's. The disappointing news is that the most recent Treasury guidance said wait 21 days and try to contact the landlord 3 times before making the payment to the household. We find that to be a very long time. If the landlord hasn't responded in a few days, they're probably not going to until day 22. And that's just simply more stress and more weeks. So it's 3 weeks that the household is then waiting before receiving payment. But overall, it is a good thing. We are able to make those direct payments to households, and taxes and other eligibility for benefits is always an issue that we have to think about in rental assistance. So we're grateful that those provisions are outlined directly in the law.
Madam Chair, Representative, if I can just add to that, I think we've really tried to frame this from the very beginning, going back to even last session and then when the governor announced the funding last July, that the best case scenario is when landlords and tenants are working together. It's a win-win scenario when the landlord gets paid because then they can pay their bills. It's just the best case scenario when they're working together. And of course, we've heard stories all throughout the previous program of instances in which tenants weren't working with their landlords and instances in which landlords weren't working with their tenants. We've learned a lot about the soft rental market, a lot of arrangements that aren't codified in leases. It's just something that, as government, you don't spend a lot of time thinking about until it comes up. And so we will be balancing between what we need to do because of the statute and the Treasury guidance, while trying to really keep in the center of our thoughts people who don't have internet, right? Design the systems that the majority of people who have internet can use it quickly, but really always be thinking about folks who don't and making sure that we have strong strategies on both sides.
And of course, that's made worse by the fact that you can't go to the library. Offices that you normally might have gone to for help are not open. Everybody's working remotely. So Representative Hassan, further comment?
No, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Wirth?
Madam Chair, there are no other member questions at this time.
Okay. We have several testifiers. Commissioner Ho, you had talked about some budget figures. Should we take the testimony and then go back to you, or what would you, do you have a preference?
I do not believe, Madam Chair, that the governor's documents have been released yet.
I see.
So perhaps I could simply say that I look forward to briefing this committee, and we can stay attentive until it's over. If you want to pull me back up, happy to stay here with Ryan and do that. I'll let my deputy commissioner go back to figuring out how to implement this new thing.
Okay.
Thank you for your time and interest on the program. Really appreciate the opportunity to present.
Thanks for all the information. We have two testifiers, members, Sue Watloff Phillips, who's executive director of Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing, also known as MICA, is here. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair and committee members, Sue Watlow Phillips. Again, I'm the executive director of MICA, the Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing, and also president of the National Coalition for the Homeless. Both organizations believe that everyone, without exception, should have a safe, decent, accessible home that's affordable for them, whether it's home ownership or rental, and that people that experience homelessness or the housing crisis need to be decision makers at every table, and that we need to address the immediate needs of people experiencing homelessness or at housing crises while we address the structural causes of homelessness and the housing crises that we have now been in for the longest period of in our history in the United States of 5 decades of growing homelessness. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning on the excellent program that the state put together with the CHAP program. It was something that we were very much advocating for in last year's session. And then at the end of the session, Minnesota Management and Budget dedicated $100 million of the CRF dollars to Housing Finance Agency. And as Commissioner Ho talked about, their staff did an incredible job in putting together a program in a very short period of time. So after the dollars were assigned to them from Minnesota Management and Budget, by July, they had an RFP out. By August, they had already decided who was getting the funds, and those dollars were then spent through December 7th. So to stand up a $100 million rental assistance program in that amount of time was just an incredible effort, and it's an effort that we have promoted nationwide as we presented at different national events about the great work of the agency. There was a great diversity of providers, the web-based system, as well as having it accessible either through 211, through the phone, through internet, or even through texting was very helpful, as well as having a paper model was very helpful too, of being able to apply. It was in languages of Spanish, Somali, Hmong, English. And so the diversity of providers was really, really helpful. And we had landlords because the way that Minnesota Housing Finance Agency set up the program, it was not designated to go to landlords, but just to renters, is that we had landlords across the metro area, especially that we work with MICA, that would have community fairs to help their tenants be able to apply for those dollars, because a lot of times people are afraid to do that, as the commissioner said. So a couple things that as we're moving forward, and some of these things have already been discussed as we've been talking here this morning, is that it was very confusing out there. We had different cities and counties running their own programs for prevention trying to coordinate all the different jurisdictions and how they were doing that really created a lot of confusion for people that were trying to know which program to try to apply for or which program they were even applying for. So I think a part of it, even with having all the metro county jurisdictions having the dollars and the attempt to try to coordinate that with our state dollars, there's just going to need to be a lot of staff training just to understand how the program works. And I think that our encouragement is continue to listen to people that are experiencing homelessness and that are in the housing crisis as far as how to make this program really work well And I know that Diane and the other staff people at the agency have been, you know, listening to all the concerns and have been taking that information into account as the new program is designed with the limitations that we have currently from Treasury, which I'll talk about a little bit more, but also to listen to the small and the large landlords too. And some of the really critical pieces that help make the program work well is that we did have the housing support program. So we had community mediation services and other agencies that were funded to really help people that struggled with the application process walk through that process and work through that process. And so we're real concerned about the way that Treasury has misinterpreted, in our mind, the actual law that was passed at the end of December, that it does not provide the resources that we think the law does have available for housing supports. And I'll talk about that a little bit more in some letters that I believe Owen has given to you that we have sent through the National Low Income Housing Coalition, as well as the Opportunity Starts at Home here in Minnesota. Some other things I just think that we need to recognize, and the commissioner did mention this, is that, you know, not everybody has internet. Not everybody has computers. Not everybody has a smartphone. And so the ability to apply for these programs is really based on that local connection to folks in the community that can help them get through the process, especially our seniors, people with limited income, limited skills, folks with differing language abilities, different disabilities, if you have traumatic brain injury, people that are afraid, embarrassed, and don't want to, have never taken government support before, are all things that we need to look at as we're trying to encourage people to get caught up on their rent and get caught up on their past rent and forward rent if they're not able to pay for that because they're unemployed. And we want to make our landlords whole. So I'm really happy. We worked very hard with our national partners and with Congress in making sure that the program would be both a tenant-based as well as a landlord-based. As the commissioner indicated, is Dakota County, Hennepin County, and Ramsey County all had landlord-based programs, and they just were extremely successful in getting dollars out the doors very quickly to tenants that had not applied for the program. And so I just want to read just one little statement from one of the landlords in Dakota County from Lindahl Properties. It said, thank you very much for the opportunity to provide some feedback on the landlord program. I cannot tell you how much this program has meant to our property in Burnsville. We had about 25 to 30% of our residents who have been unable to pay their rent for many months. Although we had distributed information to all the residents about applying for rent assistance several times, some people are either too embarrassed or simply don't want to ask for rental assistance on their own. Allowing us to provide the information directly to the county is the only way these residents were going to have their rent paid. I can tell you with 100% certainty that this program was responsible for keeping a lot of families in their homes. They would have had huge balances due once the moratorium on evictions was lifted. And these are good people. They don't deserve to lose their homes over something that they have no control over. I cannot thank you enough. Everyone we worked with at the county was just wonderful. The program was extremely efficient and smooth, and we're grateful for it. So that's from a landlord that was able to use the program that was designed in Dakota County. And now the state will be able to design the program in some similar ways, although as the commissioner mentioned, there are some regulations that are from Treasury. So I think that there's a lot of lessons that can be learned, which are really great. Hopefully you do have those letters that I sent to Owen earlier about the concerns that we have. We believe that the Treasury under the previous administration misinterpreted the law. And in the way the law is written is that 10% is for administration, as the commissioner indicated, and 90% is for direct assistance. 10% of that 90% should be able to be used for housing supports as the way the law was written. And so we are asking the President Biden administration and Treasury Secretary to take a look at this and to provide further clarification so that we can have those housing supports. I think the other thing to recognize is that if the President Biden administration and Congress does not provide additional resources for homeowners, is that this is going to need to be a priority issue in this legislative session to continue to also keep our homeowners whole too as we're moving through this pandemic. So I just want to thank Housing Finance Agency and the different counties and cities that were involved over this last year and really helping renters and homeowners stay in their homes, because prevention, as Representative Hassan said, is much more effective for people to have homes to live in, the opportunities, than if they become homeless. It costs us about 10 times as much as taxpayers, and destroys families and individuals' lives as they lose everything. So thank you so much for your time, and thank you for allowing me to testify, and look forward to continue to work with you on other pieces of legislation with MICA and Homes for All. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips. Mr. Wirth, do we have questions for Ms. Phillips?
Madam Chair, there are no questions at this time.
Okay. We have one other testifier, Julie Guggen, who's the president of the Minnesota Homeownership Center. I hopefully did not mispronounce your last name. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Julie Guggen. I'm the president of the Minnesota Homeownership Center. Chair Hausman and members of the committee, thank you for having me. As we are all keenly aware, the financial instability caused by COVID-19 is negatively impacting many thousands of our neighbors in communities all across Minnesota. For some, putting food on the table and keeping a roof overhead is at significant risk. My organization is focused on helping homeowners to avoid losing the home that they worked so hard to purchase. Since 2008, the center has worked with our network partners to help more than 38,000 households successfully avoid foreclosure and mortgage crisis and maintain the stability that homeownership offers. Sadly, with a return to normal life still a ways off, and with temporary mortgage relief programs set to expire very soon, we anticipate demand for our mortgage default prevention work to increase dramatically over the next few months. Our eyes are really set on second quarter of 2021. Without additional mortgage relief, many thousands of existing homeowners will be forced to sell against their wishes in order to avoid foreclosure. We are determined to prevent a repeat of the 2008 foreclosure crisis, during which so many lower and middle income individuals and families lost so much. Back then, our network organizations were frontline responders. We worked quickly to raise and deploy resources to support foreclosure prevention, advocacy, housing development, and community healing. But even with these and other loss mitigation efforts, Minnesota experienced a staggering 135,000 foreclosures from 2008 to 2014. Households of color were disproportionately impacted and have still not fully recovered. While complete foreclosure may be less likely this time around due to healthy demand in the housing market, overly healthy demand in the housing market, those forced to sell will again be the very people we've worked so hard to help. This backsliding against the homeownership gap between white households and households of color can't be allowed to happen again. Minnesota's gap is already among the top three or four in the nation. In order to be more successful this time around, we need continued housing assistance. We need this assistance to include homeowners as well as renters, and we need the relief to be easily accessible and understood by consumers. We were an administrator of the recently completed CHAP program, or COVID Housing Assistance Program, and we're grateful to be able to help those who did receive assistance. We're still tallying our final numbers, but we estimate we served just over 1,500 homeowners with over $1.5 million deployed. And while CHAP was implemented rapidly and included homeowners, program requirements were complicated, confusing to consumers, and limited eligibility for a large percentage of mortgages. We need to learn from this first go around and address these issues for any future programming. We have initiated preliminary conversations with Minnesota Housing staff and look forward to this collaboration as we work to secure support for homeowners. I think it's worth noting that we lobby at the national level with a coalition of organizations like ours that work closely with HUD on housing counseling, We see nothing coming from the Biden administration in the immediate future to provide direct assistance to homeowners. I would be happy to discuss my thoughts along these lines with any of you as you move forward with your work. In closing, I want to thank you for including homeowners as well as renters in your deliberations around additional COVID housing assistance. Homeownership is a significant achievement, and the economic hardship we're going through right now will turn around. We just need to make sure we're helping homeowners facing difficulty to make it through this rough patch. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Boogun, Mr. Worth, do we have any questions for Ms. Boogun?
Madam Chair, there are no questions right now.
It occurs to me, we've talked about, and I think Micah talked about contacting the president, whether our federal representatives could help us, those who represent us in the House and the Senate in Washington. I don't know if that would be another avenue that where we might get some support for broadening the parameters of the program. Commissioner, I don't know if you've had any thought about that.
Coming back, Madam Chair, certainly we've been working through our national trade associations. We've been keeping our congressional delegation informed. And you know, I think it's a high priority, it's a high priority item for everybody to elevate this. We've been working not just connections in Congress, but also incoming folks to the new administration, both at Treasury and at HUD. I even spoke with President Kashkari at the Federal Reserve because I was trying to brainstorm who did I know who knew the incoming secretary, and he promised to reach out kind of on behalf of kind of what got right and what didn't get right. So we are trying to work all those lines.
Thank you to our testifiers. Mr. Worth, any additional people on your list for comment or question?
Madam Chair, nobody at this time.
So Commissioner, I know we're approaching noon when the governor will have his press conference, and I thought his budget was going to be out at 10 o'clock, but you're saying that has not yet happened. And so at this point, you don't think you should be talking about it?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I have many bosses, but there's one who's set up to that I serve at the pleasure of, and even if I'm only a couple minutes ahead of him, I'm not comfortable with that. I will simply say that when you hear about the budget, I think that you, like me, will be pleased to see how housing is prioritized by the governor. And I look forward to getting back here as quickly as possible to go over the details of that. In the meantime, please reach out to me or to Assistant Commissioner Baumtrog if you want a walkthrough on it. Representative Tice, I believe we're having an opportunity to touch base right around noon to go over the details with you as well. So good news, and I can't break it.
Thank you very much to the agency for being here with us this morning, and to our testifiers. And again, Mr. Worth has attached quite a number of handouts with a lot of additional information that we hope is helpful to you. Thank you to everyone for the hearing. Our next meeting will be Thursday, January 28th at 10:30. There being no other business before the committee, we are adjourned.